to Mayo Clinic Educators Central, brought to you by the Learning Solutions Center at Mayo Clinic. I'm Stacey Kraft. Right now, there is an unprecedented amount of brick-and-mortar classrooms being asked to go online and move their curriculum into the virtual space. Transitioning your in-person lectures to an online space can take many forms, and depending on your specific situation, what you may need to be successful may vary, and it can be a challenge. It takes a lot of time and effort to create an effective virtual learning environment. Sometimes we just don't have that time because we need it now, which is a situation a lot of us are facing at this moment. So today I'm going to talk with my colleague Meta Kuntop about what you can do as an educator to transition your face-to-face class into the virtual environment immediately without too many repercussions on your pedagogical andragogical strategy. Now, Meta and I are in the thick of this like the rest of you. We're both senior instructional designers here at Mayo Clinic, and she's in charge of the academic portion of the team that she's on. And we are working on this problem just like many of you out there. Yeah, so today we want to talk about in this, I'll call it crisis in a way, in this hurry, what we can do as educators to make that transition happen as easily as possible in a hurry. What can you do?
Right. Stacey, I'm so happy to be talking about this. Obviously, we're looking at moving a lot of content in a hurry. So obviously we need to hit on some basic needs, transitioning content quickly. What are the basic needs for instructors or for our faculty? And really, what are some of the things that the students need and what faculty can do to really set everyone up for success?
Right. And I think, you know, when we look at this problem, the first thing that comes to mind is, okay, in a classroom setting, the very first thing that most people are doing, most educators are going to do, is be teaching a presentation of some kind or a lecture of some kind to their class. Unless you already have a blended strategy, then that might cause some other issues to come up. And I'm not sure that we're going to talk about that today. So we're more going to talk about if you have a class, it's a very traditional brick and mortar class without very much digital interaction already. What can you do? So if you have this, let's take an example of you're running a class and you have a face-to-face lecture. What do you do? How do you get it online? How do you get your students to achieve that?
So I think if you're teaching in those in-person, you know, obviously I think our gut instinct or our gut impulses, what are we going to do about the lectures? And really there are a few different things that we can do. You can still have your lecture live, but in a virtual environment. So you might use a tool like Blackboard Collaborate, or, you know, any series of others. You know, there's Zoom. You could potentially broadcast off of YouTube.
I believe you can share screens in Google Hangouts. So
Google Hangouts, yeah.
So we've got a wealth of tools. Some are you need to actually subscribe to, and some are free. Tools like Zoom, you get like a 40-minute free account, and you can share screens. And Collaborate would be part of the Blackboard suite. So if you have access to that, you can present virtually and have a conversation going on at the same time with texts like typing chat. Google Hangouts is the same thing. You can have a lot of people in there at the same time and present your screen. And when you present your screen, basically you can just give your lecture, you know, get a microphone. If you don't have one, you could probably use like a laptop built-in microphone or something, and present your slides and just present your lecture. Now, this is like, and I think you probably have something to say about this too, this is not the most ideal solution for an online learning scenario.
Absolutely.
But it's a solution for a crisis where you need to move today.
Right. This will get the content out there for your learners. It's okay for it to not be perfect, especially when, you know, when you're starting. But something I think that our educators can keep in mind, and I read this somewhere, is it really important to have that synchronous meeting. So is it necessary for you to have learner involvement or discussion as a part of that lecture? Because obviously we have this disruption. Will all of our learners be available to hop online during, you know, the 10 to 11 maybe time slot where this lecture is being given? So while you can do the lectures live, there could also be opportunities to actually record the lecture, give the lecture really just to your computer, and then record it and upload it. So then you can utilize those synchronous sessions as maybe more open forum or Q&A type opportunities. So do the lectures need to be live? If yes, you know, have the lectures live, use the Zoom or Blackboard Collaborate, use one of those tools that will let you have some interaction with your learners. If they don't need to be live, you can go ahead and record and upload that content, ask your users to watch it, and then, you know, maybe participate in some sort of online discussion board, or maybe ask them to come to a synchronous session later on that week and share information and share their insight.
I think, you know, ask yourself why you think it's important that it's live. Mm-hmm. And if the answer is community, then there are other solutions. And all education obviously is better with community, and community is a interaction, and community is an essential aspect of quality education. Now, I know we're tabling a lot of quality here because we want to move so quickly, right? But this might be one of the most essential things that you can do to maintain some quality and consistency in this going online in a hurry kind of situation, is to engage your audience somehow and to foster that community. Now, you can do that through the synchronous piece, which we've talked about, but there are other options too. Like Meta said, you could record your presentation, and you don't need fancy software for that. You can use Zoom, you can use Collaborate, you can use there are free screen capture softwares out there like Screencast-O-Matic. You might have access to some proprietary software in your institution. If you have Kaltura at your institution, there's Kaltura Capture Space. There's a ton of options out there, and I'll put them in the notes, some of the ones that are available for this episode, so that you can kind of check out and see which ones work for you. But if you recorded your lecture, then I know you said upload it, Meta. You may upload it or you know, where are you going to store it? That could be an option. If you don't have an LMS, you might, you know, I don't know, use YouTube. You could do private listing on YouTube if you're worried about people finding it, you know, basically unlisted, and you just share the link with the people who you want to see it. You could share it via email if the file isn't too big. There's a lot of different ways to get it out there.
Yeah. If your learners all have access to a network location, some, you know, files structure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have it saved.
Even
online.
Google Drive. Google Drive is a great way to store things if that is something that is an option for you at your institution. But then on the flip side, that engagement piece, if you want to engage the learners, like I said, I feel like that is probably one of the most important things that you can do, and the easiest thing. There are so many options. Like Meta mentioned, you can have a synchronous session where people come and, you know, talk about what they learned. You could use a variety of other tools which are available, maybe some to you, maybe not. One that comes to mind, which is free for educators and wonderful, is Flipgrid. So Flipgrid is basically a discussion board. You get a grid, which is empty, and you as the educator can record a question or type a question up. And when I say record, it's a video. It's about a 1.5 minute clip you're allowed, and you can write on your video, you can annotate it, you can put different things on it and stuff like emojis or whatever, if that's your thing. And then you can share that link with students, give them a code. They don't need to register or anything. They just go to the website, paste the code in, and then they look at your question. And then every student can record a up to 1.5 minute response that then automatically lands in this grid, this visual grid. And Flipgrid is, it's compatible with your Apple, it's compatible with Android, it's on the computer as well, so you can use it with your mobile devices or, you know, a computer. So pretty much any technology is going to work with this, and it's super easy. I mean, it might be one of the easiest entry level softwares that I've seen for getting people to interact. And this would be a great way to foster community, because people can watch each other's videos and they can respond to those videos, see what other people have said. And that all can happen asynchronously. You can put a deadline on that assignment and, you know, maybe by tomorrow you need to do this thing and everybody needs to watch three other people's Flipgrids or something.
VoiceThread is a similar tool. It's not free, but VoiceThread, if your institution supports this or if it's something you have budget for, that can also allow for a virtual discussion board. You can share materials. Again, it's not free like Flipgrid, but it does offer a little different.
There are a little more options with VoiceThread.
Yeah.
More powerful, because you can share, you know, video. You can share images and PowerPoints.
Yep.
Flipgrid, you really can't. Flipgrid's got that 1.5 minute thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas.
Right. So you could do a full lecture via VoiceThread if you are a faculty member. Maybe you do a 30, 45, 60 minute lecture that you could post, and Flipgrid doesn't offer that, but if you do have the budget or if your institution supports VoiceThread, that could be a potential option.
And I love that you just said that, because if you do have access to VoiceThread, like you said, the faculty member, anybody could do their whole lecture. You can upload your PowerPoint directly into it, talk over it, release it to students, and then you can ask students to comment on it through VoiceThread, because what VoiceThread does is it allows students to either type, talk, or video comments on slides directly at you, and then kind of talk to each other, and that could give an interactive feeling as well. So it's, if you have access to VoiceThread and you haven't looked at it, and you have just a little bit of time, you're not in a, I have to do it this afternoon situation, like maybe you have till the end of the week, it's probably worth going and playing around with and seeing if it fits your needs.
And Stacey, you brought up another piece that your students can ask questions or communicate. I think, you know, in times like right now where we're considering moving this content online, it seems really obvious to say, but I think it's worth saying again, communication with the learner is of primary importance. I think, you know, when we're in our face-to-face classrooms, you know, I think we just take for granted sometimes how much information we end up sharing. We don't, without even thinking about it, in terms of setting expectations or letting the learners know when to turn something in or what will be happening next. It just, it seems so natural to share that information. And now I think that's something that we, I think especially as educators, we need to keep in mind, because we might be typing this information out or, you know, sharing it as an announcement on our learning management system or via email. So that's a very, very important
piece to
remember.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because you can't expect learners to engage in your material or even see your lecture if they don't know where to go or when to go or how to get to it. So communication is so important. So being very intentional and explicit with the communication, I think, is going to be very helpful. And that's down to, you know, even if it seems like over communication, where is the link that you want them to go to? When is it going to be available? What do you expect them to do? If it's a live lecture, do you expect them all to be there? Is it required? If it's not live, when are they supposed to watch it? And what is their follow-up action behind that?
Exactly.
And you can communicate that. If you don't have an LMS with announcements, you can maybe use email. You could even, you know, I think everyone is looking
to see what they're supposed to do. I think, you know, everyone wants to know where they're supposed to go. So hopefully that won't be missed. And then I think when even you start, if you have like a synchronous activity, like a live session, when you start that session, if you're wanting a conversation or a chat or people have audio options or whatever, you probably want to set the stage for what you're expecting from your,
exactly,
your class. Yeah, like, do you want them to talk to you? Do you want them to raise their hands first if that's an option in the software? Do you want them just to chat and you'll pause and look at their chats or hold questions until the end? These kind of directions, I think, will be very helpful in helping learners navigate kind of netiquette in a way in your room, you know, and how to help you and help each other have a successful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Finding ways for, you know, just be explicit. You might feel like it's over communicating, but your students will appreciate that. I also think in terms of not just faculty to student communication, but, you know, thinking about encouraging that student-to-student communication as well. So I know we've referenced Google Hangouts or Zoom, you know, finding, you know, providing tools to your learners so they can still engage and they can still work together, you know, and find ways to communicate with each other, because we might not think about it, but that 10 minutes before a class starts where people are chatting with their neighbor, not all of that is social, you know. Sometimes it's recaps or reflections of what happened in a previous lecture or what's happening next. So
even if it is social, I think that's valuable. And that goes with that community again. So you bring up
fostering
a good point.
Community.
Yeah. You know, and maybe you open up your session with allowing people just to talk for like five minutes, or say, invite people to come to the room early, whatever software you're using.
Right.
And just chatter, you know?
Yeah. And Skype's another great tool that you can use to, you know, to sort of like foster that community or that student, the ability to interact or engage with each other. I do think you bring up a really good point, though, Stacey, even if it is that not education or not classroom specific, just in terms of fostering that community, and your students will miss that. And that's a part of the overall education experience.
Well, and that kind of leads me to the next topic I wanted us to cover when you're talking about community. We've covered like, okay, so you have lectures. How do you get your lectures to students? And we've kind of touched on that and gone into some options for that. And there's a lot more that we could say about that, but we don't have forever to talk. But what if you have a class, and many of you do, where you maybe have some lecture, maybe you don't, who knows, but you have activities, group activities. A lot of classes are based around group activities where people come to the classroom and they get into their groups and maybe they work through a application problem or a case study or a scenario or have a discussion or whatnot. How do you do that if they can't get together around a table and have a discussion? I think that question, again, that there are a lot of wonderful tools out there to help you, and it becomes more of a logistics issue once you understand the tools. So, for instance, a solution might be if your activities or case studies or scenarios are connected to your lecture, you give the lecture first or you provide it recorded, however you feel comfortable. And then maybe you assign the material that goes along with that activity to a group leader. Hopefully you have one identified, and ask them to meet separately in one of these tools, these free tools.
Absolutely.
And talk through their discussions. A lot of them have whiteboard options, and there's a free whiteboard software out there as well. So for instance, there are whiteboard programs like Openboard, which is free, that you can access on the web as a group, or Google Hangouts, Skype even, I think you can do group.
Even a Google Doc. If you have everybody who's in at the same time, you know, it's like a Word document and everyone can be typing and collaborating and you could pose questions and people could pop up and answer them.
Well, and if we're talking about them meeting separately as a group for a group activity, though, I think that one thing you can do to make that successful, since maybe you or your, if you have teacher's assistants, can't really walk around the room, right, and pop into tables to kind of check on how they're doing, is asking the learner to the students to produce some kind of artifact of their group activity so that you know that they worked on it, kind of documenting their thought process. Mm-hmm. If they haven't done that before, maybe they were just giving a presentation about it, or maybe you were just checking in and the fact that they sat there and did it was enough. I would say adding that to your requirement, and then having them either, you know, upload that to an LMS if you have one as an assignment, or drop it in a box if that's where you're, what you're using, like either shared file systems or Google Drives or Dropboxes, or emailing it to you as the instructor. I mean, there's lots of ways to share files digitally that I think we're all familiar with. That is one way to deal with group and classroom activities, as long as they are thought-based, right? Like mm-hmm. if we're not talking about like demonstration, you know, if it can be done via video, you could probably use Flipgrid or other video tools to have learners record demonstrations, or if it's a soft skills type thing. One thing I was thinking about with Flipgrid that's great is if you had proposed a scenario. So let's look at medical education for a minute and say, what if your question in Flipgrid was presented from the perspective of a pretend or simulated patient? And then mm-hmm. their Flipgrid response was, what would you respond? How would you respond to this patient? That could be medical. That could be soft skills, like how you're dealing with the patient, your bedside manner.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of stuff you can do there with this software that I think, I shouldn't call it software, this application that is really powerful.
So one thing that you hit on a little bit was groups. And I think, you know, sometimes in our sessions, I do think we take this for granted, like break up into small groups, and we just put some of this out on the learners. That isn't always going to work in a completely online virtual environment. You will probably have to break your learners up into groups and set those expectations. So I just did want to put that out there, because yeah. I don't know that as educators, we always think about, we say, oh, we're going to have them break up into groups, and we don't necessarily do the pre-planning or create a document ahead of time that say, these five people will be in group A, these five mm-hmm. people will be in group B. So mm-hmm. I do think that's important to sort of keep in the back of our mind.
And I think that's where I was, getting with the logistical piece. Like it is a little logistical for you as the educator. You're going to need
exactly.
to do what Meta said. You know, you could maybe even leave the software, I mean, open for how they meet, right? Just give them the options that you are aware of, which
right.
we'll share.
Right. And I think that sort of leads into my next point of, you know, being flexible. Flexibility, I think, is absolutely key in moving this content online. If we're having synchronous sessions, you know, ideally all of our learners are able to participate in those sessions. But, you know, depending on what's happening, I know there are, you know, there are schools that may be closed, or, you know, partners that may, you know, one may be working, one may be not. You know, so you may have different schedules, connectivity issues or internet issues. You may take for granted that all of your learners have great internet access from home. They might need to go somewhere else so they don't have, you know, the tech issues.
You know, and I think that's a great point. If you think about giving your presentation or your lecture material live, the risk with that is that you could run into some real-time tech issues that mm-hmm. could frustrate a lot of people right away. And, you know, if you record instead, you're giving yourself a buffer between that frustration of the real-time tech issue. I mean, hopefully it won't happen, but we all know that sometimes these things do.
And well, exactly. And especially, you know, we're seeing a lot of institutions are, you know, looking to move content online very quickly. And might you overwhelm a system? if everybody's trying to, you know, log on at a certain time.
So Meta, then for backup plan, like, so what does a person do if they choose to do an online live session and things go wonky?
You know, really, the technical issues are going to happen, you know, if you are a faculty member who is trying to facilitate one of these sessions, you know, right up front. You know, I would hope that, you know, maybe having someone there who can help you troubleshoot some of that may be helpful. Like, maybe you consider an alternative method where you have your live session and people can come on and they can ask questions. Maybe you're not able to get to all of the questions, so you set up a discussion board and you answer the rest of the questions there. Maybe you, you know, extend a session from 60 minutes to 90 minutes. I think it's all about being flexible, having your asking learners to upload a video, and maybe not everybody has a great connection in order to do that. So maybe you flex on some assignments.
Well, you know what's great? If you're asking them to upload a video or something and you choose to use an application like Flipgrid, people can use their telephones. Well, I mean, their cell phones, right? If you have a rotary phone, it's not going to work. But all of us have cameras. I don't think that they even make smartphones anymore without cameras. So very doable.
But does every person in your course have a smartphone? I mean, I think most probably do, but
yeah, most. And I think, you know, many, many programs give your learners computers or iPads or other types of equipment. So if you have a program that does that, you want to maybe look at what softwares are compatible with what you know everybody has. And I think, like what you're saying a bit, just plan to have a backup plan just in case something goes wrong. I don't want to scare people, because hopefully nothing will go wrong, and probably it won't, but it does happen. And if you kind of don't have a backup plan, then that could lead to panic. And I think a backup plan for a live session could simply be, I'm going to record my lecture at my computer and send it out to people. And if there were elements where you wanted them to interact with you, like, for instance, something we didn't mention, if you have any kind of ARS questions, like if you're using, you know, Slido or Turning Point or Poll Everywhere or any other kind of system like that, you can do that in your live session. But you could maybe share out the link to those questions afterwards and just ask people to participate asynchronously and give them a deadline.
You know, I think asynchronous solutions here, like discussion boards, maybe email, emailing questions or questions and answers. Again, I go back to that communication piece that, you know, lots of communication, potentially even over communicating is like so, so beneficial.
Another thing that we haven't talked about yet that I think is probably on a lot of people's minds is what to do about tests, especially the kind that we're used to doing in person, and maybe you're uncomfortable. You can't bring them all together and watch them. So what can we do about that?
Well, depending on your learning management system, you may have some type of proctoring software. So if you have a test that you have the ability to put online, the proctoring software, you know, there are varying levels, but all the way up to like you can turn on somebody's webcam and you can lock down their browser to make sure that they are doing the test. They're not getting up from their computer. And if they are, it sends you, the proctoring software can actually send you information about how many times they looked off screen or if they walked away from their computer.
What are some of those softwares called, you know?
So Proctorio, I know, is a big one. There are other ones out there. You can run a search for it, or, you know, go to your institution and ask if they have any of these softwares available. Another consideration might be moving from, you know, just a solely multiple choice type question to converting to maybe either essays or short answers or something that you can send out to the learners, they can work on and then send back to you via email.
So something maybe they can't just look up, like something
exactly.
where you're going to be able to discern from their answer whether or not this is their own thought process, and mm-hmm. rather than just regurgitate it from a textbook or a website. So you could do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I also think, like, when we talk about like formative assessments, if you are doing formative assessments live in class with just like paper and pencil, first off, I think you should consider moving into an online forum if you have one, even if this crisis is not upon us. And I think if you have access to an LMS, you can move those formative assessments there. If you're in a situation where you don't have access to that and you're just looking to give learners an opportunity to test themselves, again, we keep going to the Google Suites. You can create Google quizzes and stuff. It's not great. I mean, I don't know about its privacy for the world, like, you know, as far as protected data, but to give students a formative experience, I think it could be very helpful. And you can still collect the data for all that, and learners don't need to actually be members of Google. They don't need a Gmail mm-hmm. or anything. So that's a tool. All LMSs, if you have access to any of them, are going to have some kind of quizzing function if you're not
right
about cheating. Another thing I think that is really maybe facing a lot of people is if they transition out of their face-to-face classroom and into a virtual experience, is that people can feel isolated, including the faculty member. And you may not feel like you have that same energy to feed off of your students in person mm-hmm. as you do online. You might feel separated from them. So I think it is important to recognize that there's an energy shift, but that doesn't mean that your presentation needs to be low energy, low passion, and dull. So I think there's a lot you can do in your classroom to, not in your classroom, but.
In your virtual space.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is important to sort of like keep up that high energy when you're teaching online. And as a faculty member, you might need to do something to sort of like prep yourself or psych yourself up, for said lecture or presentation, if you're doing it, especially in front of your computer screen. You know, I don't know if I'm advocating for like, you know, throw on some music and get yourself in a good headspace. But, you know, maybe you might do that. Maybe if that gets you prepped, gets you ready to, you know, interact with your students, you know, but bring the same energy, or really try to bring the same energy to a virtual session that you do to your in-class sessions. Sometimes it's a little bit easier. You see the faces looking back at you, and you are energized by that. So maybe it's one more cup of coffee before recording your session, or
right. And you don't,
maybe
you
it's
don't...
taking deep breaths and stretching, or you know, make yourself laugh before you start a recording.
And you don't need to pretend to be somebody else. So if you're not a person who
right.
gives a lecture and is like bouncing off the walls when you give it, you don't need to like bring that to the online space, because that might also weird out your students if they know you as one person and then suddenly you're somebody else. You know, just I think that there can be a shift in the vibe, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. from your in-classroom to your online. And you can even acknowledge that right out the front.
Right.
Like, this is new. I'm going to mm-hmm. do my best. Everybody, you're joining me and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, maybe if you're in a software that allows cameras, you might ask people to turn their cameras on, or some of your students to turn them on, just to kind of give that, again, reinforce that community and that,
yeah,
we're all actually people and not just names and little weird avatars on the screen.
Right. Well, and you know, it really goes back to that communication piece. Like, engage with your learners, you know, let them know, like, we're in this together, and like, this might be, you know, my first time teaching in a online format. So you know, just be honest about that. You know, we're in it together. Ask questions. I'm here to answer these questions. I'm going to do my best. Like, I'm going to do my best. I expect you to do your best. Putting it out there.
Yeah. And so one last thing before we kind of recap for everybody. One thing I think could be very important is for learners, as they are moving in to a virtual environment almost overnight from maybe an in-class exclusive experience, that might be a little shock-inducing to their system. And what can we do to help them besides clear communication? You might consider asking, assigning your students a reflective question or two about their learning experience, about how it's been for them this week. You know, maybe you ask them what challenged you most about the virtual environment, or what was the most important lesson you learned from your group experience, or, you know, just have them reflect on their own learning process, because that will help them become better at what they're doing. Maybe identify some of their problems that they might be having, and share that back with you too, because that can enrich you as you move forward. And maybe you can make small tweaks to your strategy as time allows. So thank you, Meta, for taking the time today to talk about this hot topic.
Of course.
I just wanted to recap for everybody some of the tips that we went over. It may not be in order.
In no particular order. You know, communication, just really over communicate during this time. I know it might take a little bit more time to write that extra email or to lay everything out, but your learners will appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a great one, and I think perfect one to start out with. Also, engagement, engagement, engagement. Don't forget to engage your learners. We talked about a lot of different ways to do it, whether it's synchronous or asynchronous, using various technologies, but ask them questions, talk to them, make sure they are seen and they don't feel alone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, really consider, you mentioned synchronous versus asynchronous sessions. If you have the ability to record a lecture or a session ahead of time, if the lecture itself does not need to be live, consider using that live or synchronous time to bring everyone together and to have a group discussion, or to facilitate that group discussion, or ways to build additional community while your classes and your learners are spread out or are not in that collective, that same classroom.
Mm-hmm. And explore available technologies like Flipgrid, Google Hangouts, LMS features that may be available to you. Anything that you can find if you have in-class activities that you want to convert to virtual activities, especially group activities. And I think reinforcing group activities is very important to that community aspect as well.
Yeah. And, you know, especially if you are using some of those like new or additional tools, make sure you help the learners with understanding the technology, the logistics, and just really clearly setting out those expectations for these virtual or these group activities. Then they understand what's expected of them. You've laid it out clearly, puts everyone on the same page.
Mm-hmm. And then when we're considering tests, you want to see if there's any proctoring softwares that might be available at your institution and if that fits your needs. And also, if you have the ability to, you might consider converting multiple choice type question tests over to maybe shorter long answer ones. You can use an LMS or other software for formative quizzing. All of these options can maybe help you navigate the tricky test situation right now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things for me, obviously the communication piece I feel very strongly about, but also just, you know, bring your energy. Just because you're not in the room with the learners doesn't mean that you can't bring that energy, that passion. So, you know, don't be fake, like be yourself, but also just recognize that if I'm lecturing to a computer screen, I might not just sort of internally have that same energy level. So do whatever you need to do to make yourself feel comfortable. Take that deep breath, you know, stretch, you know, smile, whatever it is to sort of bring your energy level to a place that's good and realistic for your sessions. It's okay not to be perfect. We're all learning, and we're all working towards getting a little bit better in these spaces.
And I giggle a little bit because I'm imagining, you know, certain people, you know, maybe doing a whole routine before they, you know, log into their virtual session, you know, maybe playing, you know, Eye of the Tiger or something ahead of time. You know, if that's what it takes, you know, you do it, but
right.
Whatever works for you.
Right.
I play Eye of the Tiger before every day at work, right? So you could try it too. Maybe it'll work. I don't really people, but you know, maybe. Maybe I do. You'll never know. But you know what? Everybody, I think it's important to remember that these tips are really great and they'll get you running today. And I know that's where we're at in all over the world probably right now, but there's still going to be a lot of room for improvement. And, you know, I would really encourage you to please look at this sort of crisis in some ways, this moment, as an opportunity to get familiar with some of the, you know, amazing technologies available to us today. And, you know, these can help expand and enhance learning. And in the future, you know, you can harness this new experience and everything that you've learned and integrate it into your curriculum strategies in fresh and exciting ways when you have more time to think about it. So I think we can look at the silver lining of this and say that you're going to learn new things. And that's always great. Eye of the Tiger.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Stacy.
Thank you, Meta.
If you have any ideas for topics, would like to be a guest, or want to reach out to us, send us an email at edufi@mayo.edu.